Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. By the way, it's not often two public radio hosts get the chance to sit down for a relaxed, wide-ranging conversation, but that's what I'll be doing with Tavis Smiley to mark his 20th year in broadcasting. We'll talk about politics, race, turning success into failure, lots of stuff. Join us Wednesday, April 27th at the Cooper Union. Tickets on the events page at WNYC.org. Well, the tensions in France between Muslims and the government met another fault line yesterday when the ban on the full face veil known as the niqab finally took effect. The law itself prohibits covering one's face in any public place for what it calls security reasons, but it has been widely seen as targeting the country's large Muslim population and marks yet another point of contention between the right and left in a country in the middle of an uncomfortable debate about the role of Middle Eastern and North African immigrants. It's believed that only about 2,000 women in France, out of about 3 million Muslim women, wear the full veil, but the widely controversial law set off more protests yesterday, and as France continues to take the lead in the military conflict in Libya, the law puts French President Sarkozy in the middle of a political quagmire that he seems to be leading. So we will ask why France is suddenly a war hawk nation, even as it panders to its anti-Muslim right. Joining us from both sides of the Atlantic are Stephen Erlanger, Paris bureau chief for the New York Times. He's our American in France. And Nicole Baharin, French historian and political analyst with Sciences Po. She's the French woman here in New York. Welcome, both of you, to WNYC. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Stephen Erlanger, let's talk about the mood in France right now. The ban took effect yesterday. Three women wearing the full veil were arrested in Paris during a protest there, but not for violating the ban. They and two men were arrested for having an illegal gathering. How are the police reacting to this incredibly sensitive law?
Well, the protest you're talking about was very, as the French say, mediatized. It had been announced long in advance, and it was intended to make a fuss, and there were a lot of journalists there. There have been a few arrests today, basically people fined, nothing very major. The police are trying to be careful. They didn't really like this law. I mean, they have other things to be doing, is the general view, and if they really applied it vigorously in sensitive ghettos in big cities, they understand they could risk some rioting. So everyone's playing it very carefully. It seems very politicized, to be sure. I mean, but the French government view, and after all, only one vote opposing it was cast in the National Assembly, is that the full face veil is a sign that is politicized. It's an indication of Salafism or radical Islam, and it's a rejection of the assimilationist model that France wants. Now, you can argue with that. It seems like a big hammer for a very small nail, but that's the official response.
And what about the French public, Steve, the rest of the French public? This law, from what I've read, has turned out to be, perhaps surprisingly to us here in New York, extremely popular. Is that correct?
It is extremely popular. You know, there's maybe 6 million Muslims in France. It's 10% of the population. It's a post-colonial importation. A lot of people came in the 60s and 70s to work in factories. It's new in France. People are not used to it. People aren't sure how to deal with it. And now you have a second and third generation who are French citizens, Muslim background, and like all young people, they're looking for mastery, and they're not quite as quiet as their parents were. And the French public is generally, you know, it's a bit frightened. It's frightened about the economy. It's frightened about the euro. It's a little worried about France's place in the world. It's not sure where everything fits. And in these big suburbs, sometimes so-called immigrant-looking population, if I could say that, is up to half. And sometimes people just don't feel as much at home as they would like.
So, listeners, if you are French-American or French here on a visit or have any particular connection to France, we want to hear from you either on their war policies, which we'll get to, or this niqab ban, or anyone else can call, but definitely we're looking for people with connections to France for first priority. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Nicole, is it worth maybe taking just a brief minute to explain the difference between the niqab, the burqa, and the hijab, and which is or which are specifically banned?
Yes, I think it's worth it, although, you know, none of us, as I understand, are experts on Muslim traditions. There is the headscarf that covers only the hair and sometimes part of, the side of the face, and that has been banned in France in public schools for girls, exclusively in public schools. And everybody expected at the time that there would be a lot of problems come the next fall and the next, back-to-school day. And eventually, it worked out pretty well, and there wasn't any discussion once the law was passed. Then there is the niqab, which I understand covers the entire face, the entire body, with a little opening for the eyes, like a little horizontal opening. And then there is the burqa, which is a very unfortunate Afghan thing where women are covered like they would be under a tent, and they have only, an opening in front of the eye that looks like a fishnet, sort of.
Depending on which poll we look at, somewhere between 60% and 75% of the French public supported the ban, and it was overwhelmingly approved by the French Senate in September. But President Sarkozy's approval rating is at a low of 20%. How do you explain that, Nicole?
Well, there are two different things, really. I mean, Sarkozy is obviously playing a dangerous game in terms of pandering to the extreme right. And, there was a debate in the majority party about Islam and secularity in France, and the whole thing smelt heavily from, electoral concerns. That's one thing. Then there is the action in Libya, which is so far quite popular in France. There is the law, the ban on the burqa, which is as well very popular and seemed to be, across the board. And although Sarkozy is leading it, it's not doing anything for his ratings because he's unpopular as a person. I mean, it's like people don't like him anymore or don't like him at all or never liked him. So whatever he does doesn't seem to translate into any kind of popularity or approval, despite the fact that some of those initiatives are, quite well approved.
Steve, do you want to add to that and maybe bring in the military role that France is playing in Libya, its pressure on Ivory Coast, and anything else?
Well, I think Nicole's quite right, first of all. There's a kind of a désamour, there's a disaffection with Sarkozy. They never really liked him, but people liked his reforms and they liked his proposals, and they still do. There's a sense, however, that he talked a bigger game than he could produce, that, his walk wasn't as good as his talk. But, we'll have to see. I think the 20% figure is a little exaggerated. I mean, mostly it's around 30%. It's an historic low for a French president. But, of course, there's an election around just in May of 2012, so it's near the American election, and it's still not clear who's going to be running for the socialists, and I think it's early days yet. The socialists have not benefited very much from Sarkozy's unpopularity. That's been part of the problem. Now, Libya is a very interesting case. The French were not the colonial power in Libya, so in a way it's easier for them. They were the colonial power in Tunisia, which made it much more complicated for them. And to some degree, people feel Sarkozy is reestablishing his credibility in Africa, both in Libya and the Ivory Coast. But I think it's also true that he was pressed to avoid a massacre of the Libyan opposition in Benghazi, and the world wasn't doing much about it. And I think you know, Obama was pressed on this button too. And I don't think they thought too hard about what would happen next, because we're obviously in a sort of a stalemate. But I think the French are proud that he's taken a leading role. The French like to think they're taking a leading moral role in the world. And in this case, one could argue that that's just what they were doing, that if it weren't for Sarkozy, that, you know, the world would not have gotten behind the no-fly zone, and the opposition to Gaddafi might have been crushed in a very brutal way. You never know, but this is what Gaddafi and his sons kept promising, so maybe it was going to be true.
Steve Erlanger, New York Times correspondent in Paris. Nicole Bacharach, French historian and political analyst here in New York. Eve in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello. Eve, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. I was just going to say that I agree with the law. People should be able to see who they're dealing with and everything. Yes, good morning.
Why is... I got you, Eve. But yes. Why? Why is a matter of... of law. Why force somebody? Maybe you would like to see somebody's whole face instead of just their eyes. But why
exactly.
Why does it threaten you so much? And why should the state enforce that?
I don't say it threatened me. I just said you're dealing with whoever you're dealing with. You should be able to see the person to have a feeling how that person responds to your communication.
Just any random person on the street, you need to be able to see that?
Yes.
Because?
And also, in France, we are secular.
Also, in
if we have separation of religion and state, and people should not wearing like a badge. You should be able to communicate without afterthought. With anyone.
Isn't part of being secular allowing individuals to practice whatever religion they want without the state getting involved?
Exactly.
But may I add something to this?
I said, you should be able to communicate with anyone, no matter what their race or their religion.
Eve, thank you very much. Nicole, go ahead.
Yes, I think it's important at this point to make a distinction between the, you know, the French tradition of secularity and freedom of religion, freedom for religion in the United States. Although, you know, those traditions are not very far apart, they're not the same. I mean, France, the secular tradition has been built against a rejection of an established church, the Catholic Church. And their tradition is to really separate public and private religion and public life. Whereas in the United States, obviously, you know, you and the founding fathers were not running away from an established church, and you were looking more for freedom for religion.
Well, they were running away from an Anglican church.
Yes, but in you know, at the beginning, you had all those churches and all those religions that had freedom to build in the colonial times, and there is a great attachment to being able to express your religion in a public place, which doesn't shock people. Although I understand there are constant lawsuits and negotiations, but the French are much more adamant that religion should remain a private thing. Then about seeing someone's face and this being enforced or not enforced by law, you know, the way the law is understood in France, it has little to do with religion, but more with gender equality. So should the state force people to show their face is one way to look at it, or should we consider that there are women who are forced to cover their faces by their tradition, by their family, by their mm-hmm. community. That's another way of looking at it, especially considering that across the world, there are many places where women are forced to cover their faces, and it's not a choice.
Yoreem in Riverdale, you're on WNYC. Yoreem, we're almost out of time, so right to the point.
Hi, this Yoram Aris here from Riverdale. First of all, I'd like to say that
and you
I
have
believe
cousins
that in the last
and you have,
40
whoa, 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 whoa.
Years, they
you
lost
have,
the culture already.
Hang on. I just want to establish your relationship to this. You say you have cousins in Paris. Is that correct?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
And I've been to France a number of times, most recently 2 years ago in Antibes, Menton and Nice down in the south. And my position is that, from my observations, that the French have already lost their culture from the 1960s and 70s when I was in France to what I've seen in the last 10 and 20 years. They've already lost the beautiful French culture that, I hate to say it, that the older people who are 40s, the 50s and 60s,
based on what? Real quick, our time is short, so what are you saying they've lost it to?
They've lost it to the imposition, and this is what gets them angry, the imposition of demands by people from North Africa specifically who insist on imposing their dress codes upon them in public. The law,
imposing,
I must tell you,
are they
lawyer,
forcing? Yorim, it's a conversation. Two people
this is
speak.
A little broad, Brian.
Well, imposing, you know, makes it sound like other people are being forced to wear, but imposing means other people are being forced to look at. But I think Lauren in Midwood has a related point with baby in hand.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Right to the point.
My brother and sister-in-law, both, they live in France. They moved there to teach English in the French public school system, and they're Orthodox Jews. My brother was not allowed to wear his head covering, which is a yarmulke, in the public school system, but my sister-in-law, who covers her hair with a modern, either a headscarf, you know, a Chanel headscarf, or a cap, nobody ever said anything to her. So it just seems to me that it's more of, it's not a religious, if you have a religious issue, but it can be assimilated, so to speak, into modern culture, the French are okay with that. But if it's an obvious separation between religious people and secular people, you know, maybe there's something to be said for wearing something that deliberately separates you. And if you want to cover your hair, which many Orthodox Jewish women do, with a modern headscarf or something that doesn't look out of place, the French are okay with that. And I just thought that, you know, I mean, I felt bad for my brother, but I thought they're, you know, at least they were tolerant of my sister-in-law.
So, but what's the single standard, according to you? Should yarmulkes be allowed in public?
Well, I'm American, so I certainly think that yarmulkes should be allowed in public. I do think it does.
And then if they should be allowed in public, establishing a definition and somebody saying, I'm at least as Jewish as I am French, then should a niqab?
Right. So I think modern Jews, you know, they do straddle this line all the time, trying to be part of American French society with wherever you're living. And still maintain your religious culture, which is not easy, but it's something that I think modern Jews struggle with all the time.
Lauren, thank you very much. So Steve Erlanger in Paris, how's the Orthodox Jewish community in France on this niqab law? Do they feel like next they're going to come for us, or anything that weakens the Muslims?
Well, they don't know. Basically they're pretty assimilated, and, you know, luckily enough, Orthodox Judaism doesn't call for its women to cover their faces. So that's not an issue. And the only thing is, in public schools, as Nicole Bachan said, you can't wear religious symbols. So yarmulkes, kippahs, crosses, Sikh turbans, all should not be worn in public schools. Here we're talking about something else, which is the public street, and there's no issue of whatever you wear on your head in the public street as long as your face is open. So a Muslim woman could wear a hijab, or an Orthodox Jewish woman could wear a headscarf or even a wig. You know, as long as their face is clear, the French have no trouble.
And the Orthodox Jewish French line up on one side or another of the street law?
Well, they obey the law. I mean, and that's also the view of the mostly official Muslim council in France. It's not terribly representative, but their view is also we respect the law. We may not always like the law, but we respect the law.
Right.
And that's the way I think many people are responding. The problem is for these very few, 2,000, 3,000, hard to say, women who do wear the niqab, who do see it as a reflection of their own personal religious belief, who do not feel forced, though some of them probably are forced, they feel betrayed by the state in which they grew up, in which they were promised freedom. Now, as Nicole said, the French see it as gender equality, which is true, but some of these people will feel that their personal liberty to wear what they want has been infringed by the state that claims it's in favor of liberty, equality, and fraternity.
Right. Well, this conversation could go on, but maybe gender equality is no forced wearing of the hijab. But Stephen Erlanger, Paris bureau chief for the New York Times, our American in France, Nicole Baccarin, French historian and political analyst with Sciences Po, French women here in New York, thank you both very much for having this conversation with us and our callers. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, a call in for those who regularly get your news in a language other than English. You could be from anywhere in the world and read your country of origin's news sources. You could be here and be reading El Diario, whatever. If you can call up right now and tell us right after the break, we just have a few minutes for this, what the non-English news is talking about today. Give us a call right now. The last interesting non-English language news story that you have read, if you're from anywhere in the world or right here, 212-433-WNYC. Call us right now with that. Your non-English language news stories that you have read or heard in the last few days, 212-433-9692.